On today's 7-year anniversary of Homo Superior.
There it's also not just casting an old woman. It's casting an old woman that looks like a shriveled nutsack.
Yeah. No nutsack.
What, Meryl Streep was...
You're going to say your face is going to be so wrinkled that you're
going to
be some
weird
prune.
Yeah, they would have to like overplay it. I mean, get Ellen Barkin. She could do it. I don't know. There's tons of people.
Olivia Colman, give her makeup.
Olivia Colman would have been great.
Yeah, but she's already doing...
But no, I'm excited.
Dig up Elaine Stritch.
Oh,
she's the skull that's in Ant-Man's head.
Oh, my God.
Jesus Christ.
Is that Elaine Stritch?
Well, Brent is gay, and Kaylin's gay, and Clark is gay, and Ryan's gay, and Adam's gay. It's Homo Superior.
Welcome to Homo Superior, the only podcast celebrating 7 years, little homos. Woo. Issue 328. I'm Kaylin.
I'm Clark.
I'm Ryan.
I'm Adam.
And I'm Brent Wingate. That's right. We've been here for 7 years, queers, and we're celebrating with all kinds of sevens. So if you can spot them throughout this issue, you win a seven prize. Congratulations.
Is that a thing?
Yeah, sure. Why not? You have to redeem it on X Reads podcast.
It's only in the seventh dimension. So.
Also, Marvel released the first full trailer for Deadpool and Wolverine, and Hugh Jackman has proved that even though he is 55, he can still choke me. We have a new anniversary game to play with our Homo Superior X team. Watch out. Plus, the X comics are in the final sprint to end the Krakoan era with the rise of Powers of 10 and X-Men Forever. And as always, we have plugs you need to feel like your finger is on the pulse of what's hot, what's not, and then whatever
seven.
We like. And what's seven. But first, some housekeeping. First up, we've got a new creator crush coming out next Wednesday, May 1st. We interviewed the voice actor of Bishop in X-Men 97. It's Isaac Robinson Smith.
Ooh.
Adam, what are some of your favorite takeaways from that interview?
Voice actors are incredible. It's very fun to talk to someone who can just change voices on a dime. We did some interesting games with him. We don't want to spoil it. But also just such a fucking cool career that he like kind of rose through the ranks and did a lot of work in like Disney parks and still does, but has like picked up a ton of video game experience and is now Bishop, who I assume will be coming back very
we'll
hard,
show up at some
heavy hitting in these next three episodes.
My thing is that he is very funny, just very fun and interesting. He's got a lot of different things going on. The thing that's so unnatural about talking to a voice actor is how they can just do another voice. It sounds like that person, but it's not that person's face, which kind of weirds me out. Also,
you should get a load of morph when you say.
Also, I kind of fucked up a little bit because my voice was shot throughout that interview. So you're going to have to just listen to me whistle and wheeze through.
You get to meet a 13-year-old Brent on
yeah.
the podcast.
I'm like,
he's like the pimply-faced teenager from The Simpsons.
But it's like I'm hitting puberty constantly.
Oh, dang it. I hope he does an impression of your whistling voice.
Yeah. Plus, we've also got an upcoming interview of Tom Brevoort, who will be the senior X-Books editor. If you have questions, reach out to us on Homo Superior X or Instagram at Homo Superior Podcast. We're going to get to the bottom of his last name. Brevoort? I'm probably mispronouncing.
Brevoort.
Is he Dutch?
Brevoort.
What's happening?
It's Tom Brevoort.
Okay.
Yeah.
You got better Brevoort.
Kaylin, what are you looking forward to asking him?
About what his vision is for the From the Ashes books. You know, we've gotten a little bit of information already with Gail Simone's book, Jed McKay's, Eve Ewing's, plus the non-X-Men titles as well. You know, he's been editing the Avengers book since 1997, and he's leaving the Avengers like 26 years later. He even said in like the latest issue of the Avengers that there are people at Marvel who are working there that were born after he started editing the Avengers books. And so it'll be interesting to see
like the RuPaul of Marvel.
He kind of is. Yeah. He fracks too. Yeah. Is what Adam's saying.
I'm your comic drag mother.
Yeah.
on this one, we're going to interview him and we're going to call him mother the entire time. He's going to be really weirded out by
it. Yeah. I really want to hear that.
Looking forward to it for sure.
All right, let's move on to our MCU Next TV.
Yes, our weekly segment focused on the latest and greatest of the MCU Disney Plus TV shows. It's the seventh episode of X-Men 97, Turnaround Bright Eyes. The X-Men find Sentinel Bolivar Trask, realizing they've been played by a master mold. I mean mastermind. In this house, we don't skip the intro, but there are no new clips. But there really is pretty much every other old one except for the Callisto Storm stick battle.
Was anybody else a little mad they didn't have Storm in her new outfit in this episode? Because I was.
She's still cooking, baby. She's still cooking.
I don't know how they force those animators to draw an entirely different intro card every single week. That's crazy turnaround.
They like wake him up in the middle of the night. They're like, Nightcrawler just got a scarf.
We killed Gambit. Get on it.
Someone did do a meme where it shows them when they're like running across the screen at the school that there's like, I think someone edited in a tombstone in the background. When you zoom in, it's just like Gambit.
There's Gambit. So good. I like that Rogue did the intro. I like that every single episode has had a previously.
That's a
mixture of all of them too.
And
by the way,
my God, was this like everything that ever happened the past six episodes? Like I felt like the previously on, it's all of the threads are finally together. And we do pick up from episode 5 at Gambit's funeral. So we got people coming in with the body. And then we got the Thieves Guild. Ask about your overall comments, but I really wanted to get to these Thieves. You got Belladonna, Pierre, Bobby, who is his brother, and then Questa, who apparently is the first time in cartoon form, and she was really only in Rogue and Gambit's miniseries. But what did you think about the funeral? How did it go for you? Did you cry?
I think it was really well done. I did think Nightcrawler's eulogy was full of puns, so I really enjoyed that.
So it's a hard thing to do, writing a good eulogy.
Of course.
It's especially hard if you try and make your focus something stupid,
like cards.
But I will say, honestly, pretty heartfelt moments from that. Talking about the randomness, the fun of cards, etc.
Life like the cards
Gambit
is
gambling.
Wild.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you guys
notice? Having a tell.
Yeah.
Yeah. If modesty was Gambit's tell, what's yours?
I shit my pants.
The smell. The smell was bad.
Every time I lie, I shit
my
pants.
It's the
texture, smell, not a tell.
Or, yes, exactly. It's always the smell. It's
but
never
you wouldn't
the
notice it from my face. It's just the smell.
Hey, why does it smell like? Okay.
I can't top that, and I mean that literally.
Jesus. We're going
dark, folks.
I did love Life of Bayou Crime. Just like, oh, he's just got trapped in this Life of
and
Bayou
the Thieves
Crime.
Guild was like,
I know. They were so half mad. Of us are in that guild.
I feel like like a good eulogy, it definitely
State Farm is there.
It definitely made me feel like I liked Gambit more than when he was alive.
But isn't that always the
That's
way?
That's always a funeral.
He spent a lot of the
season.
Like,
where was
playing.
That characterization for him before?
Yeah. Well, I mean, he does he saved the Morlocks, and then he was kind of an asshole in Genosha the first time, so that's not giving him any credit. He was a bitch to the thieves.
Wait, what Morlocks did he save?
And at the end of episode 5-5.
Didn't they all die shortly thereafter?
Well, he got them to the next part.
He
got
them saved them for a minute.
Yeah.
He got them to the platform where they were all killed.
To die.
Good job, Gambit.
Jubilee's pissed off about Rogue. You know, he saved all of us. He saved her. He loved her. And then Nightcrawler said, "What Rogue battles is not mere grief." And Jubilee is wise to be afraid.
So
wise.
This, in a lesser version of the show, would have been a scene where Wolverine's sadness would have like taken over the entire thing. And I'm so glad that Wolverine's voice got through of like, hey, some people have to grieve alone. And Nightcrawler was like, come on, let's like have a more adult view about the nature of grief. And that if someone doesn't show up at a funeral, it's not because they don't love that person or aren't feeling sad. That there's a multitude of ways that you can experience this.
And it makes sense, too. Wolverine and Gambit weren't particularly close in this
That's
cartoon.
True,
it's
yeah.
like if it was
Gumbo.
Morph who died
yeah,
again.
Wolverine's like, he could have used more gumbo references. Gumbo's like a stew. It's got meat in it.
Shink. It's just like claws go out. You're like, what? That doesn't even work. Wolverine, I just want to say, he hasn't been really featured in this series.
I fucking love it.
But he is easy breezy. He's having a great day. He's like, oh, someone died? Like, he's having a great time. I really like this Wolverine. And maybe because we're not concentrating on him so much.
Correct.
They're using him very effectively. And there's another scene where that comes up. And I remember writing that down as I was watching it.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
in the Trask scene, he sort of is breezy in that.
You know, it makes me think of, like, right around, like, late 80s, early 90s X-Men, where, like, they use these characters sparingly before they, like, gave them...
Yeah, you sprinkle them.
You sprinkle them instead of, like, making them the feature like they did in the later 90s. Ugh. Which is why I love Gambit when he first appeared, and then I got very sick of him very, very quickly.
Yeah. I just imagined Wolverine, but instead of his claws sticking out, it's giant sprinkles. And I don't know why.
What?
Like giant sprinkles.
What is a giant sprinkle?
Like one
singular
sprinkle.
Oh, we forgot
like ice cream.
Just like a tube.
We forgot to mention that we dosed before we recorded our anniversary podcast.
That took 7 hits.
Let's talk about Rogue Unleashed. She goes fucks up a military base to find Gyrick. What did you think of this scene?
Fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. I mean, this is the best that Rogue has ever been, ever in the animated series. And probably one of her best interpretations, period, including the comics, the movies, everything.
The whole shebang, yeah. I like to see her speed. Which it doesn't get featured in the
comic. Such a great use of her powers in
this
scene.
It's really interesting.
This whole episode.
And then also us finding out that she's basically Hulk level strong too, which is really just a fun.
Yeah, so we do get another world building cameo of Thunderbolt Ross, same place to hold the Hulk. I wrote bitch in my notes, but I almost read unhinged bitch mutant from the swamp, and that's what he said. So that's what happened.
Said that exactly.
Yeah, but I mean, he's just fucking around, and she broke in, and then she says, "Daddy always used to say breaking into prison was easier than breaking out." And you're like, "Okay, we get it."
Her dad was a piece of shit.
He was at the insurrection. That's what my intel is telling me.
100% that red hat
in the future.
He's been aged up.
He was in Oklahoma City.
Did you notice that we had Rogue's aerial moves from Marvel vs. Capcom?
Yes.
In there?
Yes. Fucking lived.
She did a somersault in the air for no reason.
Little spin kick jackknife.
I love whenever somebody beats something up with another version of that. like
you don't bring up Kong.
I was going to bring up when you pick up a baby monkey and bash another monkey with that baby monkey, like in Kong. Godzilla X Con.
Oh my gosh. Wow. Rogan Ross thought your kind was the good guys. She said, "You killed them, sugar. Now you get me."
Great line.
She fucking nailed. I mean, Lorna Zombie, love her anyway, but like this whole character, I think, felt very nailed this entire episode.
I thought Rogan Ross is one of our fans giving us a bad review. What was the review
they
again?
Hate us.
Rogan Ross. All right. We've got Kelly and Scott catching up. Val Cooper still not located. What did you think of this seemingly very real exchange that is currently happening every day all of our lives?
Very close to home. Very, very close to home. It's like, hey, we can only do so much, and we'll get into this more about with the Captain America cameo as well. And you get like where Scott's coming from. He's like he's part of a marginalized community. Like, it's like my people were annihilated. It was genocide. And you're saying your hands are tied right now, that you can't do anymore, and you care more about the voters than anything else? Fuck you, you centrist piece of shit.
He can't even turn his Zoom on correctly. He's all squiggly and all like ugly coloring.
It's 1997 like, Zoom.
There's not even Zoom.
Can you see me? Okay? Can you see me?
Star Wars over here.
You can tell it's still the 90s, though, because I did love the line, "If Genosha looked more human, you'd be more focused on death tolls than polls." And I was like, this is a very serious conversation.
Yeah. I remember that campaign in the 90s.
Seems very peculiar.
So Cyclops made a interesting point where he said, even if you were able to find one more mutant, that can mean a lot for morale. And the president's like, I don't know about that. And then Cyclops, continuing his thought, yeah, but what about Mystique? Val Cooper. Val Cooper could be out there.
Yes.
Also, I love that the president's in charge of the UN right now.
Yeah.
What is this UN organization? Because they have secret operative groups. They are operating in ways that no one's ever expected to
just
be effective, if
secret.
Bad.
And like the peacekeeping corps that's there, that's like helping out, are the Savage Land mutates.
Yes, right.
Like, we got no one else helping, but like these random assholes who used to kill people earlier. We had like Lupo,
you know,
and
tragedy brings
and Brainchild
together,
and Amphibious and Barbarous there. I know, good for them.
I will say the thing I mean, it's a little bit on the nose for Cyclops, but the use of the word optics with him in particular.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's good.
The way I laughed into the night.
And that kind of, and you
it's
slapped,
like the Joker
you
here.
Slapped your knee, and you slapped your knee.
From now on at work, I'm just going to say, you're all about the virtue of patience before I close my teams and move on to my next match.
And then you're one of the Jenners of closing the laptop like that and then walking.
I know it's a TV show, but you could at least say goodbye, Cyclops.
So then Jean and Psyche catch up. You know, we've got some things about Maddie and Mags warned us. Jean calls out Storm as a sister again. Boy, they love saying that in this show. We have to be strong as a team. They need hope.
Wow.
Hope. They said it just like that.
Does that mean she's
optics?
In the
oh, wait. No.
I did like the line at times like these. Let's remind them it's when dreaming matters most.
What do you guys feel about Jean being like, I feel bad for you that Madeline's dead, but I don't really feel that bad. Did you get that vibe?
She said exactly like that.
She kind of did.
She's like, they're there.
I read her mind. Yeah. How do you like it?
It made sense to me. I mean, clearly, like, she's still very bitter about, like, what all happened and, you know, Scott having the psychic affair, but the woman died. And yeah. So she's like, and she still feels something for Scott. It's like, I don't know. It worked for me. It was good.
At this point, would you question everything that you've ever done in your life?
Yeah.
Like she could have only been with them for the first 2 weeks of the X-Men existing, and then they were it was Madeline for the rest of the
That's
time.
That's why she made out with Wolverine. Yeah. She's like, fuck it.
Yeah.
It just seems like this show hasn't really caught on to that fact. We know that they switched at some point, but she doesn't know if her life has basically been nothing. But
I like the ambiguity.
She might have only existed for 17 years of her life and then she vanished.
Yeah, but that's going to drive you insane. Like,
yeah,
you're
exactly.
Literally
I want to see some of that.
So I actually like the way
she
that they ended
so
it.
She's so chill about all
so,
this.
Yeah, so Jean becomes the Goblin Queen. And she just goes mad from not knowing.
It was very like author. I felt like writer intensive where they're like, we're not going to solve this. We don't want to solve it. We're never coming back.
And maybe
this.
We'll get a Jean-centric episode.
That's true too. I'm sure she'll be processing it at some point. 10 episodes.
What if it's Madeline who was fainting the entire time and not Jean?
That changes my whole.
True.
That changes my whole.
All the Jean screams should have been Madeline the entire time.
Wow. Okay.
All right. The X-Men visit Genosha. We get some Mr. Roger references.
Okay,
what did
okay.
you know?
I have just. What? I know.
What's going on?
I know.
On,
right? We always harp on Beast, but the thing about it is, when you quote someone, just quote them. You don't also need to tell us that you know who you're quoting.
No, because Tilby's got your back when you quote someone. You know, he does the quote. Then she
yes,
goes,
Riot.
Martin.
He loves the citation.
If you don't do it, somebody else will do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, just at least that one kind of works because Trish has obviously got to prove that she's
I know
she's
that.
Smart.
She's
also an
asshole.
She wants to be part of the cookout. We do get, you mentioned the cameos of the Savage Land mutates. We also see Amelia Voight, Pixie, Blob, Mimic. I loved seeing
We
Amelia.
Saw Strong Guy.
Strong Guy shows up in a little bit. There's more cameos later, Brent.
Oh, sorry.
One of the multiple man that did blow up.
One of the dupes, yeah.
That's right.
We were in Cameo City. So
multiple men's. Yeah. Nothing really happens. They arrive and then they go, okay, see y'all later. So let's talk about Rogue and Captain America.
Can we talk about Trish and Beast for a hot second?
Yeah.
Did that happen? That happened before, right?
Yeah, we just
sure. Let's talk.
Right
let's just let's
close
time. Out the Genosha trip, and then we'll go take back over
the
to
reason.
Rogue's journey.
The reason I wanted to bring it up is Beast is like my least favorite character in the animated series, and has become one of my least favorite characters. Period. In this scene, he almost kind of redeemed himself, where like I felt his anger. It's like I was, you know. I'm the most jovial of the X-Men, arguably, and my people died while you were trying to do this like interview, like in front of my mansion.
Like a quasi hit piece,
and quasi total hit piece, and it's like, and now you're pretending to be my friend and an ally, and you're looking. The line where she goes, you know, violence is never the answer, and he's like, "Fuck you," and it hit so close to home. Because when people talk about when, you know, like George Floyd died and, you know, we had a lot of, you know, people from marginalized communities dying and everyone's like, well, you know, rioting isn't the answer, you know, breaking windows and, you know, looting isn't the answer. And yeah, sure. But if that's what you're focusing on first before focusing on the tragedy, that fucking sucks. And that's exactly what Trish did. And I really wanted to underscore that.
Yeah, there's some good lines. Smashing windows is destruction, not communication. And then perhaps Professor's vision was too nearsighted and begging for your tolerance was our first mistake. And then actually my favorite on his way out. I dare not waste any more of your tolerance, Miss Tilby.
Great line.
And that's bitch is bitching.
That it was the first time I felt like, oh, there's a possibility of a dark beast or any kind of sinister version of Beast where he's like, I will do anything to protect mutants. Fuck you if you disagree with me.
They're all getting radicalized, and it makes sense.
All of them. Yeah.
So we've also got Cyclops and Jean saving, kind of really investigating the main building. We get a lot of flashes of Maddie, Sebastian, Emma, Fishboy, and the rats.
No. Oh,
Fishboy.
Squid Boy, right?
Squid Boy.
No, he has I thought he had like a really crazy name. Was it
Sammy the Squid
Boy? Sammy the Squid Boy.
Yeah. That's what I needed.
What
Sammy.
A crazy name, Sammy.
It's crazy without it. Honestly,
it got way crazier with Sammy the...
What did you think about Cyclops' apology about everything?
I mean, I think that when you have a... If you want to have the... This is a complicated relationship. Showing why two people would still want to stick together is nice. The fact that they're dealing with all this shit and yet there's still love between them. I need to see the love as well in order to believe their relationship is going to have a chance of working out.
Yeah. That's fair. They haven't really come back together at all. But they're obviously going through the apologizing phase of it rather than actually.
I almost
hope
that they'll like kind of end on a let's have a fresh start by the end of the season rather than one of like, I love, you know, like we're back together. We really
solved
this.
I'm dating Emma. Yeah.
But also in animated shows like this, much more common than the small apology was the big apology where someone ends the episode saying, I'm so sorry for something. And then the two characters make up and everything's fine.
Right.
Having it be like an aside conversation that then gets interrupted by something else makes it more real.
How can Jean read Emma in her diamond form? Who the fuck cares? It's Emma in her diamond form.
What I assumed was that the reaction she felt was she's searching telepathically and her brain, her telepathy hit the diamond and it like reflected back on her.
Yeah,
because
it almost looked like I like that because it almost looked like a bounce back or something.
Ooh.
I got my new favorite line though. Jean telepathed.
What the fuck does that mean? Quick, telepath away.
Even the tragedy jubilee is still the worst.
Yeah. She won me over.
We get a line from Emma. I've always done well under pressure.
Great.
That is such a funny,
such a funny
thing to do. You are in the middle of an emergency, and the only thing you decide to say is something about how fabulous.
So many of your friends and coworkers are dead, and you have to
literally.
Say,
she was by a corpse of her life.
Yeah.
Closest colleague.
It'd be like if you were pulled out of a burning building and you're like, I know, I look smoking hot.
Well, it could have been worse. She could have said, I've always brought me luck and just thrown herself across.
Scott has a mental breakdown and Jean and Scott continue getting back together under the guise of trauma bonding. We also did get some Jubilee and Roberto conversation where, strong guy, a forearm as well as multiple man showed up. And then we get a pretty heavy pulse allegory, right?
1,000%. And it's clear. Oh, yeah. Actually, Ryan, why don't you talk about it?
Why don't you start?
Okay.
It's kind of a sad thing because I had friends that. Yeah.
Fair. Absolutely fair. Bo DeMeo even said after the iconic fifth episode came out that he wanted to play into how tragedies like Pulse and other places where like people thought they were in a safe space and they realized they weren't. And what Jubilee and Roberto's conversation really hit home that, you know, Adam was underscoring is if you were here and your family found you, wouldn't you want them to know who you really were? So they when they buried you, they knew the real you. And it's like, man, that fucking just got me. It was so good. It was such a powerful line.
It's true. And Roberto was sort of like, I guess. Yeah, he wasn't really. No. He's still not quite on board, which I think that's part of.
It's his journey.
Every coming out story or whatever journey it is. But he's kind of still hesitant where he's not really going to go for it.
Yeah.
We can see why shortly.
Well, yeah, it's literally the like, I think
because his mom's drunk on spritzers. Yeah,
it's a weird thing because I really enjoyed him including the line that when we throw it in their faces. This is what happens to us. That's a very real fear, and it's understandable, even if, you know, I think we would all agree that it's, you should still be able to be true to yourself.
And it's that's why we have, like, the no kink at pride kind of stuff, you know, or like, oh, they'll respect us more if we're respectable. And respectability politics.
Assimilation.
Yeah, respectability politics is a problem.
Let me water my ass down for you.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Did you say assimilation?
Assimilation.
He said assimilation.
All right, let's go back down the rogue plot. She's flying around. Did she get coordinates from Ross, or she just kind of just been searching around?
I would assume she got some sort of
info from
there.
She kind of just paced the fuck out and showed up.
Yeah.
But she's met with a pure vibranium shield, one Captain America.
Oh, that's who that was.
Who doesn't think Genosha was just a mutant tragedy. It really shames us all, but really getting crazy about
really?
This might dishonor us all.
Yeah, really all lives mattering, this Genosha.
He's playing it so safe, and it's annoying.
It is, because there's been really good interpretations of Captain America in the comics where he's like, this tragedy is for all of us, and I am going to do what I can as a decent human being. Him playing him as like this bureaucrat that, like, where his quote unquote hands are tied.
America's top cop. To hear.
Oh, I love that porno, yeah. Though, by the way.
Oh, yeah. But it's a bottom, ironically.
I mean, this show has already been greenlit for 2 more seasons. So my hope is that
you love an expanded.
My hope is that, yeah, that this is actually going to be a potential growth point for him as a cameo character.
Well, I also appreciate if you contextualize what's happening in the show. This is X-Men 97. We watched all of 92. Like, this was a very unwelcoming world to begin with. They kind of rehabilitated. But it is like the equivalent of any sort of diversity initiatives where everyone goes up. Oh, we've learned something. We're ready to go. And then shit gets hard, and they say, ooh, we gotta really think about this before we make any things that might upset something.
This didn't happen to just you guys. This happened to all of us.
Val Cooper.
But only you are gonna do something. Yeah.
Val Cooper is all of us.
It happened to all of us,
all
which is
humans.
Why I cannot help you.
All these normal people like Val Cooper and me, we're just like normal. And you're like, no, girl.
Bo DeMeo even said he did this scene because he wanted to delve into what it means to be an ally, like their surface level, and like somebody who is truly an ally. And I think even though sometimes I felt a little out of character at times, I'm glad this scene existed. Yeah. I think it was important for that to happen. The one other thing I'll quickly mention about Captain America, I kind of wish we hadn't gotten spoiled that he was going to be in it. Could you imagine?
Would have been a reveal.
The reveal would have been amazing.
Totally.
They didn't need to hook more people
in.
People are hooked on this show.
Like, correct.
They were getting that one little MCU little nugget, hoping for. So, but some I like his little variation of his music when he arrived too. It was a different take on it.
Oh yeah,
I mean, we've seen him before.
We have, yeah.
With the flashback with Wolverine.
Yeah. Which is also, I love that it came back. But yeah, it's, I mean, just even seeing the thieves at the beginning of the episode, it's all of those callbacks and even him showing up. Even it all just like makes so much sense.
Do you feel we're going to get a backdoor cameo pilot out of another appearance of him? He talks about his team.
I need a fucking spinoff tomorrow.
Like the
Avengers.
This animated universe.
And then they could
grow.
Eventually do it. We're definitely going to get spinoffs. It could be him. And then it could lead to an Avengers versus X-Men.
Spider-Man
sort of
too,
like,
since Spider-Man is also in this universe.
He's very much in this universe. You could have an uncanny Avengers.
Someone,
love it.
Someone in one of our comments had noted, gosh, what am I thinking of for spinoff? Oh, like, because with Emma around, like, how much can this fucking cast grow on the main one? And it's like they would have an easy
Hellfire
like Gen X spinoff, or yeah, that's what I was thinking.
So in this lab, they discover the OZT crew has been here. Can anyone remind me of who OZT is?
Yeah.
Are you done with OZT?
I'll let someone else fully explain it, but it did take me until literally today to go, oh, that's what it stands for.
We were just talking about it as well off podcast.
Let me ask this first. Do they hate mutants?
Yes.
No. Oh, okay, just checking.
Oh.
they love them.
Say it in a Sentinel voice, Kalen.
They are the Operation Zero Tolerance.
That's a Dalek.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, that's a good Dalek. Same thing. Daleks are like space Sentinels.
I'm going to give it a Sentinel out of 10.
That's pretty good. Yeah, they are a group. They're like anti-mutant bigots introduced in the 90s in a storyline called Operation Zero Tolerance, which also...
OZT for short.
Featured Bastion.
Yes. What's crazy to me is that I was kind of sitting there the whole time, and I feel like we didn't talk about it enough, where it was, what is it, Tolerance is Extinction stuff. And it's just funny that I'm like, oh, wait, the two plot lines that they use to kind of serve as the base
for
this.
Oh, E is for Extinction, and it's a nice little mashup there.
Steve Rogers doesn't want to do any Mexico head bashing, which actually kind of makes sense.
Good extra.
I do not like that sentence.
I think it's, I like it so much. It's a good extra.
Cyclops and go, you stupid bitch.
Yeah.
Captain America.
Yep.
Right?
I was going to say optics.
Oh.
This is another way.
Because of Cyclops.
Like,
yeah.
This is a legitimate concern. Maybe you don't want the symbol of America to go invade another country.
It's
pre 9/11.
Yeah. It's got a point, but where a Batman costume and go or something.
There you go.
Nomad. Sure, Batman's in this.
Put on
universe.
A new outfit. If your hands are tied, you won't be needing this. And Rogue proceeds to fucking chuck that shit.
That created so many memes. It was great.
And avalanches.
Yeah.
He had to be like, what the fuck?
It's the most angry that Captain America has ever looked in any media.
So hot. So hot.
What they didn't show you is that when she threw the shield, it bounced off the mountain and came right back.
Right to his arm. Boner City. She was holding onto that shield for so long, too. Well, she was just like walking around that place with it. I really loved it.
It was. I did think they handled.
It showed a good trust between.
That's what I was going to say. There was so much great back and forth between them.
I know he's stupid and he's not going about this the right way, but he does want to help. So I think there's a little bit amount of trust there.
I just remembered Rogue's first appearance in the comics was Avengers Annual number 10 as a bad guy fighting the Avengers along with Mystique and the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants.
Yep, with bad hair and a bad outfit.
Well, so yeah, I mean that precludes almost that they've really, like, there was a, I think agree with you, that there was some sort of, like, it felt like they were almost leaving room that there's lots more ambiguity to fill in on how they know each other and what sort of relationship.
Like, maybe they should kiss.
There's another backstory with her, and she
she's
also dated Captain America.
She becomes a super soldier.
She can also touch her hand.
Black
right?
Widow gets introduced. She dated her.
It's a super serum. Yeah, I can, like,
we
touch
we were both super soldiers, and he pretended like we weren't.
When she shows up at the Hulk place, they're like, oh, your old boyfriend, Hulk.
Everywhere she goes.
She has dated everyone.
All the people she's at, she was like, after she fought Thunderbolt Ross, she's like, by the way, I'll see you for Thanksgiving.
Do you remember when Sentry died in the comics and then they're like, oh, Rogue's sad because she used to fuck him and that it never happened on screen on the page before?
What?
They did. Literally,
I blocked that out.
When Sentry got ripped open. No, that was Ares. Never mind. But Sentry died at some point and then they had like a fallen hero issue and then like Rogue's crying and you're
good
like, what the fuck is happening?
I mean, that's great. But also, Sentry, you can do better. Come on.
Well, how is Rogue?
She really likes that void, though.
Fuck all these people. Does everyone have abilities to negate her ability to drain their abilities?
That is, yeah. She's good for her. She figures it out.
I'll tell you, someone she's definitely draining. It's Gyrick. She shows up at his R&R department. He's a butterfly collector.
In Mexico City, by the way.
Yes, and we get a nice callback to, let's just say, you freaks aren't the only ones making friends in high places. What did you think of this, my battle of the minds and physicalities, I guess?
What I liked about it was, like, this ain't a prison. This looks like a resort.
Yeah.
And that worked because it's like sometimes you have, like, high-level, like, criminals who basically are at, like, Club Fed.
Yeah.
And it's like, this is fucking nicer than, you know, my mansion, you know, in Westchester.
I just love, Adam, you and I love that Rogue when she touches someone's skin, she's got to scream.
It's been the first time.
Can she control that? Is it so overwhelming that she's got to scream?
She got it from Banshee.
Or, Okay, well, I love that. But, like, wait, is it so much that she can't control it at that point?
Well, because, yeah, I remember when she tried
to help you.
When she was trying to deliver the baby and she tried to take over the doctor's power. Remember how much she screamed?
Oh, that's true. But she just didn't know any medical knowledge before. Yeah. She's like, you mean antibodies do what?
I'm glad they...
Medical school is really tough.
I'm glad they cooled it a little bit. But, yeah, I do miss a bit of the scream. But we do get her doing the power stealing and having a vision that essentially knocks her out of what we know to be Bastion. And also Nimrod.
So we get our fifth hint that we're going to get death version of Gambit in this.
Yes, what was it, Clark?
Well, because they're at the Day of the Dead, and they just keep looking at these skulls, and you're like, okay, okay.
Yeah, it's a little...
She's not racing.
I mean, they might as well just had Gambit's coffin open up and him flop out.
She looks at that skull, and she's like, Is that skull sexy?
Well, so, right, this is all...
I miss Gambit.
So if Gambit is death, that means Apocalypse then, correct?
Yeah, and Gambit was Apocalypse.
Yeah, right.
So it just,
whom Rogue also dated.
At the Day of the Dead celebration, Brent and I were watching, and it just said, one of them just said, miss you.
Oh, yeah, you know, like one of the cards.
One was like, just see you later.
Leech, yeah.
Yeah, with the X-Men, see you later, really.
Get well soon.
But yeah, we find out that Trask actually reaches out to the team in Genosha. It's been a real mutant massacre, quote unquote, that he doesn't want to be a part of. So he asks the UN Peace Legion to come to Madripoor. This is the scene where Wolverine is non-existent, and I realized how little he was in this entire episode and how much I fucking loved it, because he's just like, sounds like we got strange bedfellows. That's the only thing he's ever said besides.
He's just... basically doing the cap of every conversation.
Yes.
And then just his claws come out.
I'm here, clang. Yeah. So they do arrive in Mexico City first to wake up Rogue. What the fuck do you think happened to her?
I think it was just so much that she passed out from the experience. But and then probably the goons there just sort of like kicked her out on the street.
Said, take her outside.
We won't kill this woman. Just let her.
This resort's too nice.
Did we see her actually collapse with... When she was doing
she mind's eyes
and she screams, but I kind of assumed that she started to fly.
She's passed out, she started to fly away
and then collapsed.
She goes on a bender. She's drinking mezcal. It's Mexico
City.
Oh,
see, you all had an optimistic interpretation then. I feel like most of the people I've talked to are like, something happened. Either some sort of mind virus like got Rogue, or some, like she's going to be potentially blamed for Gyrick's
death. She took out all the guards, so there's not really anyone to stop her.
I just think that it was a non...
She just peaced out?
Yeah.
She just walked. Why the fuck was she so passed out then in the middle of Mexico City?
She had some of Mrs. DaCosta's seltzers.
Yeah, which is just a full glass of wine.
Sleep on the fucking roof, for Christ's sake.
Why?
I got to talk to my son.
That's a thick, red seltzer you got there, man.
Right.
Yeah. I do love the line, obviously a little bit cheesy, but, you know, Nightcrawler's trying to put some pep in Rogue's step of, like, she didn't help get them killed. She helped them to live. And what is a woman other than someone to make men feel like they're worth living?
Oh,
Fraulein, you will be put in the refrigerator soon.
It's but he had to stick it to her for a little bit first because she was like, I lost my love. And he was like, you actually lost two people?
Yeah.
Because you were dating a lot of people because that's what you do.
Bonkers.
You date a lot of people.
You have to remember you also lost your daddy boyfriend.
You lost two.
Thank you.
So good.
Before we get to Madripoor, let's close out the Roberto Jubilee.
Plot.
We've got Roberto's coming out. I mean, just being a mutant, he's trying to do. They're building their relationship. They're holding hands.
Did anyone think
sweet
Jimbo, the butler, sounded exactly like Patrick Stewart?
Yes, he did.
Oh,
I definitely got that. It was very Patrick Stewart.
It was
as
like
Professor
a creaky
X.
Older.
Like an old English butler. Yeah.
We get some kind of really like. I don't know, the real life coming out story, because this mom is always known, she's very happy, but don't fucking tell anybody because it's going to affect Q3 earnings.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm really...
Q3 is the hardest, though, to be fair.
For real.
I was very happy with the way the scene unfurled because, you know, mother always knows, like Roberto just like blurts it out, doesn't like ease into it. And she's like, your dad and I just wanted you to like have your journey. Great. But don't tell anybody. And that's so fucking real. It's so real for me, honestly. Like, when I came out to my parents, they're great now, but many, many years ago, Yeah, they accepted me, but they were like, we are not going to go around and talk about this, basically.
What did they say about Q3 earnings?
They were like, you know, those numbers, they're looking a little soft.
That flower shop, nobody could know that you're getting.
Correct, yeah. But no, it's real. I mean, I think that's real. It's like, hey, we'll accept you, but we don't know the rest of the world. Yeah. And like,
our
friends.
They're being protective because my family is the same thing. Like, oh, it's going to be so tough for you. And I was like, it'll be easy for me. How dare you? I'm going to be the gayest thing ever.
Yeah.
And Roberto didn't have that reaction. He sort of was like, yeah, we'll see. He's not quite there yet.
Because he's a child of privilege. And so he like there is a little bit of that.
Lose any of that.
I love that they're not allowing him to be an X-Men until he's fucking out and proud.
You've got to come out of the closet.
No,
you
better
be
proud if you're going to wear
your costume, bitch. It's like assless.
Here's your brick and there's Stonewall. Go throw it.
Yeah. So Guy Rick, even though no one else seems to think so, Guy Rick wakes up getting his treatment. It's actually Bastion there. They're obviously chatting about some big dream that they had together. But then One-Eyed Purple People Eater plays. And the other thing that I had about this is, couldn't Rogue and the rest of the X team, obviously they need to go to Madripoor, couldn't they just go back to Mexico City? Like, it didn't even look like it was already moved, because I thought they showed you that it was like back at the compound.
I don't know. I have no idea where that was taking place.
I just want some goddamn credit for that.
I don't understand. I think they just grabbed Rogue and left.
Right, but wouldn't she have said, hey, y'all, I read something. I guess, like, he can't get anything else out of her. They can't get anything else out of him because they already said, you're telepathic.
Right, but they already had another lead to follow.
I guess. Well, they were cramped in an elevator in
Madripoor. No, sorry. That was a really good point.
They're cramped in an elevator in Madripoor. What did you think of what the UN is doing with worldwide funds to make robots?
I like their stance on soda pops. I think that's great.
Always have diet.
Yeah, they always got diet. I wonder if they have Crystal Pepsi in this world.
Oh, 1,000%.
Oh, do you think they could go up to the machine and get a tab?
No.
Do you remember Orbitz? Was that a drink?
That was a drink. Orbitz.
There's
little
beads in there.
Oh,
little
God. Beads. Those things were disgusting.
Oh, yeah.
It was like white boba tea, basically.
Yeah.
White person boba tea.
White person boba tea. And that was not tapioca. Or the Snapple that came in the metal bottles.
Ooh, yeah. Oh, that I don't remember.
Is gross.
They confront Trask / Oppenheimer at the top of the building. He's death.
But he said that line before Trask said, I am become death.
I know.
So it sounds weird. I'm calling out Morph.
Bolivar Trask is kind of a hack. He's like, oh, you want me to be Oppenheimer? I'll be fucking Oppenheimer.
Very different stance. I think he yes-anded him. He was like, yeah, you're right.
Wait, Oppenheimer yes-anded? Yeah. Or he Morph saw into the future and yes-anded Trask?
Yeah.
I'll win an Oscar. Absolutely.
And yes.
Rogue tries to get more info. I'm sorry, Trask has nothing. And she says, same sugar. And throws that fucker off the building.
Well, he was going to kill himself, so she kind of just held him there for a second. I'm on her side.
Nightcrawler would have stopped. Would have picked him up immediately.
That's what I was thinking.
Nightcrawler didn't do shit. Jean didn't do shit.
I think it.
Like, there's no way.
All
there's no way Nightcrawler wouldn't. Yeah.
And Wolverine's like, yeah, he had it coming.
I mean, Nightcrawler was there at least in Genosha, so I like morphs of like this. Who's this?
But
we
they
become.
Were all still shocked that she did. I
can imagine.
I think there's
shock.
Also maybe they didn't realize she was actually going to
probably
do
just
it.
Shock value. I mean, if one of you threw somebody off of a building, I certainly
would. I would believe
immediately
it.
Use my teleporting power.
Well, I'd be throwing
depends
you off
on
the
which
building.
Way, yeah.
I'd be much more shocked that you held someone off the edge of a building.
That was
What, because like, your upper body strength?
With one arm. Yeah, that's very impressive.
Oh.
True.
But surprise, he's not actually dead. In fact, he is a human sentinel. He fucking finger blast Rogue and...
I don't know if that's the right term.
Do you want to take two on that
I read that wrong. Finger punched Rogue.
Yeah. He one punched...
Take three.
One punched
one
Rogue.
One punched man.
There we go.
He's like, when we used to date... I am mad at you.
Another Dalek right here. Perfect.
This is definitely like this all feels like a Reddit am I the asshole thread. This guy tried to kill us and all my friends, and he killed some of my friends. And then he was trying to jump off a building, and I saved him. But then I threw him off. But then he came back and punched me. Am I the asshole? Sorry, female 33. He is a male 48, half sentinel.
It was creepy seeing his like neck turn around. That, that was a very good visual.
The worst way to turn around is to snap your own neck and then rotate your body afterwards.
I don't know. My chiropractor says it's pretty good.
Dude, so he knew they did this to him, right?
I would assume so, yeah.
Because in the comics, the Omega Sentinels were kind of forced into it.
Oh.
Yeah.
Like, Karima was basically just shoved into some body-altering machine and became a Sentinel.
Hence why she tried to be kind of good
If he knew, I don't think he would have tried to throw himself off the building.
I don't think he knew.
Yeah.
I don't think he knew before you... I think he was just felt a lot of doubt, so he was like... I'm not going to turn into a sentinel is what it was.
It's like a fail-safe program.
Yeah, totally.
That's what it seems like. And then, you know, we've got, so the battle, you've got Nightcrawler on the field, Jean and Cyclops using their building powers and that.
Yeah,
she
we got
a
another
building.
Great line from Wolverine. Summers.
Yep.
They really don't need to use him.
Love it. He also has, it's funny because after Jean threw an entire building into the water, I was like, oh, Wolverine powers suck. Like he is, it is incredible how much his social cachet dragged
fists
him.
Took out Beast and Wolverine in one.
They didn't do anything.
Yeah. They really didn't. Yeah, and they
Sentinel
used to
Trask, Rock'em Sock'em Robot'ed. Yeah, those two.
Both of them. It's they don't use him fighting. They used to in the previous series, so it's so strange. I kind of want to see him do something cool.
More, I'm sure he'll have some gigantic thing at the end because he's going to save Jean for some reason. 100%. Summoning the Phoenix.
Yeah.
Morph is Quicksilver today. That was fun.
That was cool. Great.
I loved it.
Wasn't too fast.
What's your morph up to today? It's Quicksilver.
Gene went Super Saiyan.
I mean, what is it? Is it basically just like filling the role of a sink? Like S-Y-N.
Yeah, but
he just happens to look like him, too.
Sync doesn't become,
become death.
It's just a way of, like, doing more
cameos. I don't mind that they... And maybe they will have an explanation for it. Just like a typical comic, maybe they'll have an explanation for it.
I
know,
Price,
one or
two seasons. Like, in a fight, they're always like, Morph, why don't you be someone else?
Don't
get out there.
You already used Psylocke. Use someone else.
Just channel Gladiator every time.
Gladiator.
Be Storm every time. Cyclops goes hard, but Nimrod goes harder. Tell me, Orphan, how does it feel to be abandoned by the future? And then they're saved by the future. It's actually Cable. He's got some cluster EMP grenades.
And a flat ass.
I've got a flat ass.
There's no asses in the future. There's not enough time to talk about this. There aren't flat asses.
We don't do squats.
There are only flat asses in the future.
Sinister's working for someone worse, and that someone is none other than Bastion, who has been in every episode except for 3 and 6. Which isn't kind of half of them.
Which is, if you analyze it even more, it makes a lot of sense. And I'll tell you why. So if you connect this string to this, it's...
Well, Cyclops has been in every episode, so I'm not that impressed.
That's right. How does this deliver... You know, Sinister and Bastion are talking. How does this deliver the prize you promised me? Very interested to know what that is. And then more importantly... you've got Bastion. You and the villains of old have been failing since 92. And then Sinister says you were one of those villains once. And he says, I evolved. Is that supposed to be that he is
Nimrod.
Someone from 92?
Nimrod.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
That makes so much sense. I was just sort of sitting there like, is it Cameron Hodge? Who is this?
Well, I think this is a great reason to read the X-Men 92 comics because in all of it, Sinister... is talking about trying to apply new strategies.
You mean 97?
97.
The Steve Fox miniseries.
Sorry. I don't know why I said 92. That doesn't exist in any form whatsoever.
It actually does, but
I was thinking
I'm
going
to throw myself out of a window and then you got to catch me.
Then I'll throw you away. Yeah.
My thought at the moment is that Apocalypse's essence is somewhere again.
Totally.
And that's what Bastion has that Mr. Sinister wants.
Yeah, that could be right, yeah.
Maybe it's that stupid cube that Apocalypse always kept around. Remember that, like, weird cube?
Oh, you mean Hellraiser?
I was going to say the Cosmic Cube, the Tesseract.
Basically that, yeah.
And then, obviously, he's got an eye in to the Shi'ar, Bastion does, and so they find out that Gyrick didn't kill Xavier, and so there's a big plot now where they're going to pull the fucking... curtain up, I guess, on this and really fuck over the poor mutants. And then we get Bastion doing his best Jeff Goldblum impression and shaving Magneto's beard.
I was going to say and crushing a man, suffocating a man to death.
I got big Reservoir Dogs.
Yes,
vibes.
That's totally where it's
yeah,
coming
I know.
From.
I needed to hear Stuck in the Middle with you when
yeah.
that scene was happening.
Yep, yep,
What I love about them finding out that Xavier is still alive, it's very much like what Orcus was doing for a good chunk of Krakoa. Was a lot of like fighting mutants like through pop culture and through like psyops and like trying to turn humanity against them by like, hey, they're withholding information from you.
Yeah.
In the comics, it's withholding information about resurrection. And in this, it's withholding information Xavier's about Xavier, who was a martyr at the end of the 92 series.
Hey, you made us believe in you.
I think watching that video, I would be concerned as humanity that he's going to bring an entire group of aliens to
bird
just
people.
Like millions and millions of bird people who have an empire to go kill you.
They're coming.
Not
they're
that
coming
he's alive, but that he is.
They have bird flu.
He's in charge of an empire.
Ed, a quick note. We know who the voice actor is, right?
Theo James.
Theo James.
Well, that's what we kind
known,
of assumed from the beginning.
Known hot person,
yeah.
Theo James.
He sounded very different compared to... I know
did.
That's
he
what acting is all about.
I mean,
yeah,
that's
I was
his
like,
American
oh.
voice.
Yeah, oh, okay.
He was like, I'm doing Jeff Goldblum. Yeah.
All right.
So,
yeah. Anything else on X-Men 92, 97, 94, 96?
Have
you seen the clip of Theo James and Kayla Scolario or whatever from The Gentleman? He just starts speaking and she like grabs his leg and she's like, your voice is so deep. and it's like, oh.
So
fanning myself.
Not a spoiler, but a theory out there is that you know, Bastion isn't just shaving Magneto, he's going to actually take a skin.
Ew.
And turn hot. Like hot. Do what Zorn did for like Magneto like in the Morrison
oh my
run.
God.
And so Magneto comes back as like this like evil version
yeah.
or,
love
like this. And
that.
So that would be another way that they're doing mashups of like
oof.
different characters. So
he's
gonna banshee him.
Yeah.
He's gonna,
yeah.
That's exactly what
that's
I was talking about.
You into skin play now. I am. I didn't know until
I
now.
Always have been.
I'm into barber play. Is that a thing?
It is.
Oh, there's totally
no,
barber
no.
play.
Brent, it is a thing.
Yeah.
Barber play and Barbara play. It requires a woman named Barbara.
Meat pies. She brings the meat yep. pies in.
All right, let's get into our preview review. It's the end times at the end of time as we get our first full trailer for the MCU's first R-rated movie and only film this year, Deadpool and Wolverine. This trailer has so much... So much. Was it too spoilery? Does Cassandra Nova look too young? And are there only three locations in this movie?
Yes, yes, and yes.
I'm hoping there are no further questions, right?
I'm hoping it's one of those. I mean, I presume with especially like a multiversal movie that it is what we're seeing is maybe like, you know, the same 25 to 30 minutes of the footage.
Yeah.
And that the entire the other hour will be insane. I am so glad that buzz for this is picking up so much steam. X-Men 97 is successful because this will hopefully preclude them from over pumping the previews and other commercials just to drive more people into theaters. Like, I think if they get a good read on it, they'll leave more things a secret, which I'm desperate for.
I really, really hope that they do. And I even saw somebody on Twitter saying the post-credit sequence is going to freak everybody out, and that's all they said.
I also read that Rob Liefeld said the same thing.
Yeah, well, he
quoted I don't like that he knows.
Yeah, I don't like that he knows either, but we did.
I don't like that I saw his fucking feet on Twitter. Get those off,
yeah.
Rob. If you can't draw them, you can't have them.
He lost money on his OnlyFans.
Okay, so what Wolverine do we think this is? I think it's a different version, like Old Man Logan that never went down the...
Yeah. Old Man Logan pipe.
Yeah, it's one we don't know.
Yeah.
I'm interested to see what those pylons were for that he was like kneeling next to.
They
cool
look like gravestones.
Yeah.
And there's one scene, obviously, of the Ant-Man mouth opening,
yep.
which is really cool visual.
Which is actually just a skull in there.
Yes.
Yeah. Because it is comics accurate.
So it could be Cassie.
So it's actually
could be his daughter's skull.
It's actually Gambit from 97. But so they show a bunch of characters there, and everyone is theorizing all these different characters. Well, and some of them are so outrageous. Like, there's a person that is red, so obviously that might be.
I mean, it is. You can see it.
They have
Azazel, sure.
Pyro, Callisto from
Toad.
X3,
Toad. Strike.
There's some guy that's wearing stripes. I assume he's like a mutant that runs a gondola or something.
This is definitely her brotherhood.
But there was definitely some heavy reaching because they were like, oh, yeah, Quill's also there somewhere in the basically any person
that
was
little
available.
Blurb.
Yeah.
The face looked really different. Yeah.
That Sonic the Hedgehog looking motherfucker. That's cool.
I mean, most of those will die quickly.
Oh, 100%.
That's
what they do
best. Deadpool movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
As far as revealers, spoilers go, I think that.
Let's call them revealers.
Revealers, yeah. This trailer probably was a little bit more information that I wanted, but if you watch this trailer, you don't need to watch anymore. More trailers.
I don't want anything else.
Don't give
me
anymore.
I think this is the perfect format for me, just like revealing the villain for the audience.
Yes.
Add something. I don't think I need anything else.
She looks too young.
I think she's going to be good, though.
She's going to be fantastic.
I think she looks great.
You want
love
an old
a good
woman.
Besides,
I don't know. Maybe I'm different.
Besides the fact that it's like casting an older woman in Hollywood is near impossible, especially to take on a lead or a villain role. Mm-hmm. I think it was just like such a direct opportunity to do that I'm a little frustrated.
Helen Mirren that Shazam too.
Oh,
it's also not just casting an old woman. It's casting an old woman that looks like a shriveled nutsack.
Yeah. No nutsack.
What, Meryl Streep was...
You're gonna say your face is gonna be so wrinkled that
they would have to like overplay it. I mean, get Ellen Barkin; she could do it. I don't know. There's tons of people.
Olivia Colman, give her makeup.
Olivia Colman would have been great.
Yeah, but she's already doing.
But no, I'm excited.
Dig up Elaine Stritch.
She's the skull that's in Ant-Man's head.
Oh my god!
Jesus Christ.
Is that Elaine Stritch? No, I think it's Casey.
All right, let's move on. To actual other stuff.
I want to not move on for a minute. The only news I have is that Wunmi Mosaku, who plays B-15 and Loki, is going to be in this movie.
That's cool.
I don't know if it was revealed or announced today, but
yesterday. Announced it, baby. Breaking news.
The only one who knows. Rob Liefeld, the only one who knows this thing.
Quick, take a picture of your feet.
Sure. Oh, you want me to literally do it? Okay, Brent, what's going on?
What do you mean, what's going on? You're going on, bitch.
Hey, let me give you a hint. Happy anniversary. Seven of them.
Yeah, I guess it's the anniversary, right?
Yeah.
It is.
So remember how we have an X-Team? And they've been on a little hiatus since Christmas when all that lube happened.
Yeah.
I still have so much left over.
Yeah, but have you used any of it?
I'm not going to answer that question.
It's great for like stir fry or scrambled eggs.
Yeah.
Anyway. For my hair.
You can fuck scrambled eggs.
Clark, who was on this team?
So as we know, last September, we all voted, all of us, all 3,000 people listening right now, voted on Homo Superior's very own X-Team, which ended up being Laura, version of Wolverine, Polaris, Northstar, Richter, Magic, Sync, M, Boom Boom, and Storm. And for the last 9 months, they've been battling baddies while getting into patented X-Men soap operas and having that lube-filled Christmas, as we already said. So for our anniversary, it's time to enter the inner workings of our squad by awarding team members superlatives for the X-Men tropes they most embody. And because it's our 7th anniversary, there are 7 categories, but also that was totally coincidental. I didn't mean to do that because our whole 777 thing was decided afterwards.
Good planning.
So our team character tropes are the team couple, the team rivalry, the captured and brainwashed member, the member that seemingly dies on panel and then at the end of the issue. And the next issue, you're like, oh, no, we're fine. And then the team entry point, which is also our proxy, like our Kitty Pryde. And then our power upgraded member. And then finally, the team mess. So for each category, I'm going to name a character. We're each going to name a character we think is the right choice. And then all of us will decide who the official canon character is for our team that is that trope. Each character can only be used once, so once we decide who Team Couple is, we can't have them be anything else.
What if they're a mess, though?
What if they're a mess? Yeah, we put them all in the mess category.
So certain ones can't be used. So for Team Couple, Sync and Laura can't be used because it's too obvious and it's already been done. You can't do something that's already been super done. So brainwashed member can't be Polaris or Laura because Polaris has been brainwashed a billion times. Member who gets power upgrade can't be Storm or Sync because they've had power upgrades and stuff before. And then Messy Bitch can't be Polaris and Magic because they've
or
been
boom
messy.
Boom.
No, it can be Boom Boom.
Oh, okay.
I think that's the most canonical one.
Yeah,
okay.
Well, they can't the messy bitch rules, in like baby. a psychological way.
Got
they're going to destroy your
yeah,
ex's
like
wedding.
Like they're going to destroy. Yeah, they're going to become monsters.
She's just a drunk.
All right, so we're going to start off with team couple. Adam, do you want to start off with who your choice for team couple would be and explain?
Yes. For team couple, I chose Storm and Monet. I just thought they're both very sexy. I think they're both very powerful women. Maybe as they got older and formed connections, they decided to explore rather than just being platonic. I feel like their relationship would just be very cool. Like, they would just be so, I don't know.
Everyone would want to be with them.
Yeah, I think
powerful lesbian couple.
I want to see, like, right, I want to see, like, the bedroom talk where they're both, like, getting ready and they're both, like, giving each other, like, good advice and, like, thoughtful stuff. And then they're just fucking dominating.
Storm's like, have a taste.
Brent, what's your chaotic version?
Well, I picked Polaris and Magic for two reasons. One, I would like to see Magic's relationships explored more because I feel like I have not seen that a lot or ever. And then two, because I put all of the other characters in other categories. So Polaris ended up in that couple group.
Great.
Wow.
The two messy bitch choices that you can't use are the couple.
Yeah, the opposites attract, maybe, Polaris?
Oh, because of Polaris. Yeah. Love it. I'll go. I think it should be Boom Boom and Magic, because once again, like you said, Magic, it'd be fun to explore her backstory. One's a little bit serious, and one's a little bit...
rock and roll.
Yeah.
But a C-U-N-T.
I think Boom Boom is just a good time gal, too. I think they could have a fun time together, but they could ground each other, too.
Just a good time gal. Yeehaw.
Kaylin, why did you choose the same?
I love the chaos of them being a couple. Magic, we're not sure.
It's going to ground them, and you're like, it's going to be chaotic.
Yeah, exactly. Magic is depends on your interpretation as either ace or is bisexual. And we've seen both versions of it. And I think Boom Boom would love to explore her bisexuality. And I think the two of them, because of their history as New Mutants, I think would be really, really interesting.
So mine is because I just want like complete bloodshed as Richter and Northstar. I want to just smash some couples up and just see what happens with the pieces. Like go full Cyclops and Emma and just.
So can That's Richter only date people who have star at the end of their
yeah,
name?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, all right.
So sorry, Kyle. You're couple dumb is boring anyways.
The plot goes as this. Richter walks in on Kyle and Shatterstar hooking up.
Is interested in anything.
Flips
and everything.
Out and then they start dating.
Well, it's like Shatterstar.
You know the gay couples. We're friends with them.
Or what if Richter is Northstar and Kyle's boyfriend? We've seen
Ooh,
that.
Oh,
can't they just have like a four-person...
Quadruple.
We said couple.
Quadruple.
That's my husband. That's my boyfriend.
But that's my boyfriend's boyfriend.
Yeah, exactly. Your primary and your secondary.
Yeah. What's the next category, Clara?
Which one are we deciding?
How do we decide this?
I mean, it looks like there's two votes already for the Magic.
Yeah,
then
it won. There's a vote.
Adam and Brent. And
I mean, I'm happy with Magic and Boom Boom. I think that's pretty cute.
I can live with
I'm into it. All right, Magic and Boom Boom can't be anywhere else. Okay, so.
Who do we got next?
We're going up to our rivals. Who are our two rivals? I'll start backwards with Ryan. Who are the rivals?
I want to see Monet fight with everyone at all times. and the only one that I think can go up against her would be Storm.
So Brent's couple
is the rival. I love that.
Well, sometimes
couples
are
rivals.
You
want to see them have a really bad time in the bedroom.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just think it would... There are two powerhouses that I would like to see go up against each other. Interesting.
Interesting. Isn't that interesting, folks?
So I agree with Monet being one of the rivals, but I want her to go up against Northstar because they're both like head bitch in charge. And they both have like absolute like no nonsense attitude, and the two of them I think would have a lot of friction.
You know,
with each
Monet
other.
Would call her a faggot.
Yeah, she would. Yeah,
she'd be like,
"Listen, faggot,
shut the fuck up."
And Northstar
would be like, "You're the faggot."
Yeah.
So I like the choice of Northstar, but I think that Laura would be an interesting contrast for him because different styles of leading. Also, as two characters who are. Kind of, you know, I think of them as being like somewhat isolated, but have a very close bonding with like one or two other people. Hmm. I think that they're interesting as like, those two are the ones who are navigating the team and have different views about the direction it should go.
So I am in the alternate universe of all of these hookup stories between the gays because
love those.
When it was actually Shatterstar and Northstar fucked, and then Northstar and Richter have to be on a team. It's not that they wouldn't mind being open, but they didn't talk about it, and they didn't say no stuff on the teams beforehand. So Richter's still a little bit sore, and so is Shatterstar. But but so anyway, I just thought it would be really fun to have that chemistry. And like then they learn, obviously, over the run to enjoy each other's company and get over it and all have sex.
See, mine was, and we can't use her anymore because she's already been used, but M and Magic, I think, would be a good rivalry as well for a similar reason for Northstar and Monet. But just in terms of similarity in age, I think would also be interesting.
For rivals, it feels like it's a slam dunk.
So
for
we have
M to be one.
Yeah. Got three North Stars and three Monets.
So
it's
got to be. Okay.
It feels like a North Star Monet combo.
Yeah.
That works. Full of faggots. Monet's words, not mine. Monet's words.
Don't quote me on that.
All right. So which member has been captured and brainwashed?
I mean, there's three people who picked Sync and one person who picked Richter and one person whose person is chosen. So why did you guys pick Sync?
I thought Sync is going to be an ultimate villain type since he can boost everybody. So if they're going up against other mutants and teams, I think it'd be so fucking cool.
Yeah, I think he's too powerful, so they got to take him off the chessboard for a while.
And yeah, the other ones would be, besides Storm, they would be easy to immediately beat. I guess Polaris would be difficult too, but
I feel Polaris is brainwashed, and I feel Storm has like had not necessarily brainwashing, but like she's already done enough where they have to go against her.
Yeah, a lot of people have controlled her minds for hot seconds during Claremont's run.
I know there's a big block for Sync as a coalition, but Ryan, why Richter? Maybe if I vote for Richter, it can sway the vote to go to Sync.
No, I want Sync.
Okay, Sync.
Richter was my leftover one that I had to put somewhere.
Sync it is.
We're all synced up.
So who's the one who's momentarily deceased, and how does that affect the future storyline if they are, and then they're fine?
Okay, so I thought Boom Boom would be a good choice, but it was like Boom Boom is missing, possibly deceased, and then 8 issues later you find out that she's just been at like a all-you-can-stay resort just drinking cocktails and hanging out on the beach.
That resort with Guy Rick or whatever.
Yeah.
Right. I like
Go ahead.
I like Polaris because she could be like her father where he's usually dead and then resurrects and shows up at the last minute.
The resurrection of Magneto.
So I kind of pulled that through. But she seems like a good character off the board. And it's always fun when she turns up, right, to come back and really whoop some ass.
I picked Laura / Wolverine because she has a healing factor and the fact that something killed her, I think, would affect the story.
Ooh,
it's like, what
that would
kill
be.
That would actually change her. Yeah, I love that.
I'd be down with that one. We're kind of split across the board, right? Is there one?
Yeah, because we can't pick Sync, and we can't pick Boom Boom, so we've got Polaris, Storm, and Laura.
When you said Polaris, I did Storm for the same reason. She's such a big character that momentarily taking her off the board would.
I think that would be good,
I'd be down with Storm as well.
All right, well, let's take a vote. I vote for Laura.
I vote for Laura.
Yeah,
there we go.
Laura has it.
I vote for Polaris.
Kill Laura.
All right, so
let's start the campaign now.
Yeah.
So we only have Polaris, Richter, and
Storm
left. So
Polaris is getting the upgrade then. Kaylin, why is Polaris getting an upgrade?
Well, Richter can too.
For me, I think Polaris should get the upgrade because I think she's always had such untapped potential as a character, and they've always kind of like ended up making just her like leaning into the fact that she is bipolar and like leaning into the quote unquote crazy a little bit. I want her to be the most powerful member of this team.
They've had to nerf her so many times throughout the years.
And I'd like to see with this upgrade, I'd like to see a different, because she's sometimes, other than it being green, she's just doing Magneto's power. So I would like to see another angle on what her powers could potentially do.
She can manipulate plastic.
And we've seen that, honestly, in the current comics with her controlling the Brood and like taking on like Orcus that way. So I think that would be pretty cool.
So my choice can't use it anymore was Boom Boom. I just want to see Boom Boom totally unleashed.
I also chose Boom Boom.
She's touch a freak, but I want her to be like, now she's a freak, but so powerful.
Yes,
that she
but she can't do anything. She can't like walk without exploding. It takes a drink of water, it explodes.
I know my suggestion was it's vetoed in principle of the game, but I think Sync would be interesting.
More?
Because I don't like that his power drains his life force and the more he uses it. So I think it could be interesting if he had a kind of a lateral move. Like, he learns how to control that ability, but the power has to come from somewhere, and he actually siphons it from other people or can use it himself.
I like that.
I did forget that that occurs, and so I'm really happy that he becomes the brainwashed person, because that's even cooler. Of like, we've got to save Sync before he kills himself, essentially, by trying to fight against them.
Oh, yeah.
And
this
for
is a great story.
Should we be writers?
Yeah. We're, this God, this is the best team ever.
So who do we upgrade?
It's going to be Polaris.
The one we chose. Yeah. All right, so now we've got Proxy.
I like the exploding boom boom. Yeah.
Ow!
She's got her powers are actually miniature neutron stars.
Oh, my God.
She blows up the entire planet
boom boom
immediately.
Boom just sneezed because she has allergies. She took out half of the eastern.
It's like Hiroshima, Nagasaki, because she fucking like blew. Yeah. All
right, so we got Proxy and Mess left, and we only have Storm and Richter.
Let's talk
so
about.
We've
got
to figure
out.
A
lot of Richters.
So Richter has always been a mess. Storm has never been a mess. And I would like to see Storm be a mess.
Yeah. That is the tea. Storm is always composed, always with it. Even when she's going through a crisis, you still respect her. And you're like, you got it, girl. I need her to be in such a not great place that we see another angle on her.
Well, it's where if she's like, yeah, if she's downtrodden, then it also fits the storyline that Polaris becomes the like key power player.
Look, she was depowered in 97. We're like, your mother. And, ride that horse.
And with Richter, Richter as the proxy character, I think we just need more queer stories.
I agree.
I mean, he's very. He could be a very.
It's a good point.
Protect queer stories. So.
Protect queer art.
And but it's a real queer story. So he's just like horny the whole time. He's like, oh, I should probably.
He's
check
horny
Grindr.
For all these.
I
people.
Should probably check all Grindr. Right.
So what's our final team?
So our final team is our. We have a couple, which are Boom Boom and Magic. We've got two rivals, which are North Star and Monet. Saying fag to each other all the time.
But the couple is also saying fag to each other. Yeah,
in the last 8 months, we've had one person cap who had Sync captured, and Laura was killed. But then turns out at some point gets better. And
they killed Laura and captured Sync in the same movie.
Yeah, and then in that process, Polaris got an upgrade. A power upgrade. And then Richter's been telling us all this shit. We've been seeing all this shit through his eyes.
You'll never hear
as
it.
And then we just
You'll
see Storm is
Probably
just like
how I got here.
Off her fucking rocker at the moment. Just
that's how any of this
drinking.
Shit went wrong is because Storm was like asleep at the wheel and became a mess.
Yeah. Maybe it's like some sort of psychic break or something where she's just more muted. I honestly, I'm like into the story.
I'm sold on our team.
I
don't
want
to
like let's pitch this.
I want the weather to change like really aggressively. Like
okay,
some sort of.
So what?
And then it turns her almost like drunk or something.
Yeah, yeah.
That
so
she
Polaris,
can't show up to,
Polaris gets her power
she's
upgrade,
drunk on
and she
change.
Just starts affecting things electromagnetically, and this makes Storm just kind of like constantly haywire and crazy.
Ooh. Oh, she becomes dark and stormy.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that.
All right.
But she's a drunk.
When you guys talk to Tom
Brubert,
make sure to pitch it.
Okay. Yeah, he'd be like, shut up. You're canceled. Yeah.
Okay, Tom, we've got
And also, why aren't you using Dazzler? Just like us.
So we're a Dazzler podcast.
All right.
Happy seven, everyone.
I love this team. Love the team ups. But let's get into our issues.
Thank everybody for voting for those characters.
Oh, yeah. So let's get into our issues. The issues, it's our weekly recap of all things X, and we're also picking up all things in the new Ultimate Universe. And this week, we have seven comics for 7 years. So the books we're reviewing, Rise of the Powers of 10, number 4, X-Men Forever, number 2, Avengers number 14, Wolverine number 48, X-Men Unlimited Infinity number 136, and Ultimate Spider-Man number 4. So, Rise of Powers of 10, number 4, and X-Men Forever, number 2, are so inextricably linked, we're going to review them together and then like offer our feedback there. Both are written by Kieran Gillen. Rise of Powers of 10 is illustrated by R.B. Silva. X-Men Forever is illustrated by Luca Maresca. So, we finally get to the deal that Charles Xavier made with Orcus that was hinted at in last week's Fall of the House of X. The mutants and machines have to team up, and to hell with humanity. It's the only thing that they haven't tried yet. Or so we think. In reality, he seems to be buying time for the mutants remaining in the White Hot Room / Atlantic Krakoa to resurrect the Phoenix, the only being that can take down Enigma. And based on upcoming solicitations, we know that Jean Grey is going to be the host of the Phoenix.
Good for her.
She never gets any spotlight.
Yeah. She really doesn't. She's never been
the
Phoenix.
I'd be interested to see what happens with this Phoenix and her.
Yeah.
this Jean, young ingenue.
She moves to Arizona. So after getting killed by Xavier in the last issue of Rise, Ascani gets resurrected, and so do a bunch of mutants who lost their lives over the last few months, including Mr. Sinister. Several of the mutants seemingly head back to Pacific Krakoa, with the exception of Hope, who's going to be the catalyst that ensures that the Phoenix is reborn. So I got some questions.
Before we started that, and I don't like calling out usually our notes of write-up, but I love that you basically made Enigma a drag queen and called it Angina.
Amazing. I love, you know what? Actually, we're going to call her Angina from now on, because yeah. she's like, I can see everything, but I don't trust that bitch, Charles Xavier. This is like her like untucked moment.
Wait, Angina, why don't you talk to Charles? Oh, I don't trust her.
Why do I feel suddenly attacked?
Angina.
All right. So what do we think of the deal that Charles Xavier made with the AI segment of Orcus?
We kind of knew that. We knew that he was going to protect mutant kind. But I love that he's like, remember my old dream? Well, what if it's the exact opposite?
Where what if it's a nightmare?
Specifically kill humans. Yeah. Like, it's so wild. Last ditch effort, you know?
Yeah, we're not going to protect a world that hates and fears us. We're going to kill it.
It's a
different take. I mean, I don't know how you make that plan without realizing that the AI eventually is going to be like, we don't need you anymore. Like, because they're not that significant.
Well, so I really enjoy actually in the issues that concept of like, you guys don't have to fucking gloat, okay? But I almost love that they are, because it's showing that AI can also have hubris as well. So there's just a lot of those elements where like, oh, we've completely won this. We'll put you in a cage. It's real cute. You fucked us over in the future with that Phoenix sword. We're not worried about it now. Like, they are definitely playing them as more human or human emotional villains, I think, than, you know, I think many of them would be like, no, systematically kill, systematically win. But
this is going to come out, right? That's why in this future solicitations, it's like, now it's Mutantdom's darkest hour something.
And Prisoner X is in the mansion.
So that's why they're in exile.
Yeah, they're going to be like, yeah, see, they wanted to kill us all the whole time.
Well, they already kind of did, because he already started killing some of the military ships. So that alone is war crime level stuff.
Yeah.
Two things I loved about it, honestly, is obviously I don't love that he did this, but when he says the mutants have to win, and Moira gives him a look, and I think it's such a really well done scene.
They definitely dated.
They're like, and she's like, she like has like a little bit of like sympathy and pity for him.
Yeah.
And the other thing I liked about it is like the mutants that are in the White Hot Room, like Hope and Exodus, they're the, you got to break some eggs to make an omelet type
mutants.
We're soldiers, right? And so they're like, it's worth it. And like Ascani is like, no, she's the idealist, which is also ironic.
That's
because
what I would
she
be
came
too,
from.
So I appreciate it.
Yeah, and it very much fits in with the character. This feels like the most Hickman-esque comics since he left, even though he didn't write it. Because again, like I said last week, don't trust these hyper intelligent, usually white men that think they know better, because they're gonna fuck things up.
I don't know if this quote tracks, but in 30 Rock, there's a line into the crevasse, which is referring to like Jack got his legs stuck in like an ice thing, and the only way to get out was by going down further into the ice. And
so dig up, stupid.
So for the whole episode, all the people are doing worse things in order to get out of their bad situation. And this is just like, the only way out is through.
It is Kieran Gillen. It's just so fucking good. Like, I think I agree with you, Kim. I'm like, this.
It does redeem the past four issues.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Well, just not.
Well, that was Fall of the House of X.
Excuse me.
Yeah, Doug.
Okay, how dare them just make one long mini? Because reading this,
it
was
been all 12
was
together.
It's fantastic.
Was out. No, it was not fantastic.
You didn't like it.
It was out of order in a chaotic way. These two to come out this week.
Yeah, they wanted all this done in 6 months, and this should have been a year worth of stuff.
Yeah,
Dead X-Men should have been not. It shouldn't even exist. I'm sorry. Those characters.
They said in these comics that they did a big deal.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, they inadvertently got a fucking stone stuck in their chest.
Well, so but if that team was allowed to exist
Dead
beyond X-Men narrative.
Dead convinced Xavier not to end all of Krakoa,
just,
in theory.
All of this shit's so hectic, and the fact that we read two comics that are so conflated in my mind that I don't know which one happened and which issue now.
I think they could have organized between the two stories a little bit more.
It is absolutely chaotic, but I'm really glad that these two issues came out in the same week that we could read it. So I liked these two issues, but I agree with you, Ryan, and I have been saying all along, this is absolutely chaotic and not in a good way. It doesn't feel like hyper-intelligent plotting. It feels messy, and it feels like it's not even – I don't even think it's Jordan White's fault. I think this is like – like upper level management this up.
I just want to get like both issues in paper form and just tear out pages and put them together in the order they should be. Because it's
claw out the eyes of the characters.
I don't like.
I'll marry you,
and
Charles.
Then say bitch really big on it like a burn book or something.
It's so rushed that RB Silva is not even going to draw the fifth issue of Rise of Powers of Ten. They're gonna. It's Luciano Vecchio who is very nice. Good.
Yeah, but it's just right.
But like RB's, like I would like to have some artistic continuity.
Did you guys remember that the no place flower thing that they the space cabbage they've been hiding out in?
Yeah.
That Charles and Sinister walked into that in one of the issues when Charles was having a psychotic break on the island. Do you recall that? Until that came out of the water on Krakoa.
Oh yeah, the little orb.
I completely forgot that that had happened at all.
Yeah,
and that
was
cool.
Good callback. That's a really good callback.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah, please.
What do you guys think about like the Sinister of it all, of him being called back and everything?
I mean,
because they were done with him, but they still called him back. I thought that was really interesting because that feels like
we love a callback. Love it.
I think
we
it was
love a resurrection.
I think it was inevitable. Like if you have Enigma being the ultimate big bad, then you've got to bring in the remaining, the remaining Sinister. So you've got, Mother Righteous doing her thing, basically, being trapped by Enigma now, and like Orbis Scalaris isn't around anymore, and Dr. Stasis is killed off.
Yeah.
And so you needed to bring back the Mr. Sinister of it all.
And real quick, is Hope going to shoot the Phoenix in the head, or what's going on with that?
I hope so.
Optics.
Yeah.
So
no one's trying to kill you with a gun. And you're like, great? Great.
Are they just leaving a bunch of random mutants in the White Hot Room forever?
Oh, my God.
What was going on?
Poor sad one that's from Wisconsin
bug boy.
Or whatever. Yeah.
That's what they were saying effectively, that by way of resurrecting the Phoenix, then having all this happen, it's going to change how the White Hot Room works and all this stuff.
So you guys are going to die. Sorry.
It is. I mean, Exodus's comments were quite insane in the sense of like, usually I'm the one that's supposed to save people, but you saved me.
He was sticking it up in this one. It was pretty funny.
We saw Beak in there. We're just saying bye, Beak.
Yeah, bye, Beak.
Bye, Beak.
Bye, Beak.
Everyone else is a random nobody, and then Beak.
Well,
it
leads into
they're all
going
to be dead, too, I guess.
Well, it probably leads in, because there's, over 250,000 mutants or some shit like that? It leads to the, element of the rise from the ashes stuff of just, they're probably not going to be, all gone, but there are going to be such
just
a sizable amount of people. Because they could always pick people out or go save them.
It's like the next 198,
without
actually killing them off. So last question. So towards the end of Rise, you see the group chat that Enigma's on. He says, if the Phoenix returns, we will all come. Who is we?
Bunch of Dominions.
Bunch of Dominions from
Dominion. What is the plural of Dominion?
Dominions?
No, it's Dominions.
Dominions?
Dominions.
It's Domino's Pizza. That's got it.
Dominia.
Mother Righteous is still an asshole.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
She's
the worst.
Once again brought all this shit up.
She's crazy.
She's absolutely crazy. But that's interesting to me. Okay, so Enigma's he's the trickster Dominion, right? Like, he's the one that's kind of off on his own.
Yes.
So he's still, talking to the other Dominion.
Yeah.
And they're coming in, and I'm just curious, how that's all going to work.
I know. We're going to find out.
We're going to get
like Dominion's design. It looks like a boss at Super Smash Brothers.
Do you mean Angina or?
my apologies. But it looks like a Super Smash character you beat at the end of the level.
Yeah.
Just a giant face. And you're like, what is it? First, you got to punch the nose, and then you got to. I'm like, what is it?
You hate the runway look.
I just don't like it. Yeah.
It's a little pedestrian.
It is.
So we saw the Technarchy version of a Dominion recently in Resurrection of Magneto. Are we going to see that one again?
Potentially.
Bring back my Dominion.
I have six Dominions standing in front of me.
Sashay away.
The Dominion crew is just a boys' club. It's just bullshit.
It is, yeah.
Maybe it's a boy band.
It gives toxic white guys.
You think Moira's going to get a Dominion? One Dominion.
That's pretty good. All right. So for the rest of the comics this week, we're going to do a hated or hotted it. So I'm going to do a very quick fire round with all of y'all. First up, Avengers number 14. Writer is Jed McKay. Artist is Francesco Mortanero. What do you think, Brent?
Hated it. Don't know what the point of it was. I mean, it just like also said, well, the now Orcus is over. So I don't
and
know.
And here's Blood Hunt.
Not
a single X-Men in it.
Well, now that we've wrapped everything, oh no, what's that in the sky?
Very TV show. I kind of loved it.
I hotted it because I love 3D Man. I didn't even realize he was in this series until we started reading it. I'm like,
he
no!
wasn't.
Oh.
We saw the two issues he's been in.
Oh.
They made him into a bad
guy.
Damn. And kind of a good guy.
Hated it.
Also, his glasses flip colors on several panels.
That's
hot. I like that.
But only if you're wearing 3D glasses, they come out of the page.
What do you think?
I hotted it. I enjoyed it. It was like we were talking about the first issue. I like that they found a very interesting way to solve for the massive attack. But overall, yeah, no, it's hotted it for me.
How about you, Clark?
It made me excited for the team that they're gonna have for the Blood Hunt.
Yeah, with
Hercules and
Radioactive Girl and what's her name?
What's her name?
Hazard. No.
Hazard. Yeah.
Hazard. Oh, the.
I love her.
Yeah. I love Hazard as well.
And Captain America. Captain America. Steve Rogers.
Yeah.
Somebody else, I don't remember who.
I hotted it only because I think I like the way Jed likes these writes these characters. So,
yeah.
But overall, it's kind of superfluous.
I think we just needed to. It exists so we could have the building that the X Men are going to be in.
Yeah, Scott's
in Alaska,
team.
Yeah,
totally.
All right, Wolverine number 48. Writers are Victor Laval and Benjamin Percy. The artist is Corey Smith. Clark, I'll start with you.
I hated it so much. It's just like quick page panels of like we're just getting to the next point, folks.
Hotted it. It's a great installment in part 83 of the Sabretooth War. You know, sometimes you need a stall.
It's a hotted it because I know there's only one issue left.
Two.
It's very, very much setting up the pieces, and now I'm just like, I'm ready to finish this plot.
I want to be done.
Oh, I did. I will say I hated the fucking Muramasa blade and the stupid adamantium armor.
Nah,
go fuck yourself. What is this? The 90s.
I guess I can still be a little dangerous.
I can't wait to buy the action figure. What'd you think?
Adamantium armor, a Muramasa blade, blood armor lube, like what it was just so.
Yeah,
I
did you hate it or hot it?
We're spading.
Blood Hunt.
Let me just say, I hotted it. I liked
Jesus
it.
Jesus Christ.
I'm with Clark. I hated it. I'm tired of the storyline. It's gone on for way too long. They could have wrapped it up a lot sooner. All right, Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver number 3. Writer Steve Orlando. Hi, Steve. And artist is Lorenzo Tometa.
Hotted it. I just enjoy their writing. I think they're fun. I don't like Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch, never have, but I am
never will.
I am endeared to them. I think it's a really good series.
Hotted it, and I won't explain why.
Yep. Same. Yeah.
I hotted it. I love Quicksilver.
Yeah, that was the best part about
it.
He's
written really well.
Yep. X-Men Unlimited Infinity, number 136. The writers are the Steves. Steve Fox, Steve Orlando. Artist is Nick Roche. Ryan, we'll start with you.
This was nice. It was a nice little quick. These are always so quick, but I loved it. Hotted it.
I don't know how to feel on this because I feel like some of these issues are just okay.
No fence sitting, Brent.
But then when you like read three issues in a row, it's very fun. So I'm putting it at a
lukewarm.
Yeah, I know. I agree. I hotted it based on the fact that all these together will be great.
Yeah.
And there's just not enough space or time for it to be like an AAAA plus kind of thing.
But the nice thing is that it's weekly. And then our final issue of the week, our seventh issue, Ultimate Spider-Man number 4, writer is Jonathan Hickman, guest artist David Messina. Brent, I'll start with you.
Hotted it.
Ooh, yeah.
Hotted it so hard. Just, it is so nice to have a story where there's actually compelling dialogue, movement, complex characters, and you don't need to throw in a random ass fight for no goddamn reason.
I'm a Brent. Hotted it.
Same seas.
Ditto.
I say hotted it, but I've decided that I don't like this universe only because of the way it's written. Every issue is a month, so like there's so much.
You like the writing.
There's
but you
so
don't
much.
Like the
I feel
written.
Like I'm like seeing 1 second
Cliff
of something happen. Yeah, exactly. It's frustrating.
I didn't realize it was actual time.
It's
going
to be 18 issues or 18 months getting to the point where the city opens. So basically, the city opens. So basically,
the city. You're right.
So basically, we're just going to be missing everything the whole time.
It'll be almost purely narrative.
The fact that with Black Panther from last time, the war has already been going on for 3 months, but it just Black Panther's just hanging out somewhere.
We're not getting enough.
We're getting nothing. Yeah. It's not getting enough. We're getting nothing.
And Ultimate X-Men is moving at a snail's pace.
Well, that's not an issue because it's just going to be like it's just a girl at school meeting.
That's just acceptable.
Yeah.
Like 18 weeks.
Each episode is like her at another class.
Yeah.
One day.
Seeing all the stuff going on. There's nothing going on around her that is.
No, I know you're saying.
Like the other two are just like, there's so much shit that's clearly going on that we're just missing out
this
on.
This art with it is just so phenomenal.
It was a good, guest artist.
Characterization's fantastic.
It's fantastic. Yeah. So this was our unison hot edit. I loved this issue. It reminded me of X-Men number 4, which also Hickman wrote. Which was just mostly dialogue when Apocalypse, Magneto, and Charles Xavier went to Davos. I also think Harry Osborn delivering the line about with great power must come great responsibility, fucking gut punch, which makes me think he's going to die, and Gwen Stacy, his wife, will become the new Green Goblin.
Ooh. Loves it.
I'm into it.
That's great.
I just love how much Gwen Stacy's like, I know you're Spider-Man, goddammit.
Yeah.
I know your wife isn't. Come on, get this together.
She's great.
What's going on with your asshole?
You weren't supposed to watch me right now. As always, we like to wrap up with a little something we call Plug Me Daddy, where each of us get to quickly highlight something we've read, seen, heard, and wanted to share with you. Our Lil Hum was on our 7th anniversary.
I've got one.
What do you got?
There's an Instagram. I mean, it's just a comedian, an Australian comedian who does a puppet act where they kind of like talk about the day's news and then also do a lot of audience engagement. It's Randy Feltface, and it's very funny.
Oh, yeah. Sammy J and Randy.
He looks very fun.
It looks like Ryan's microphone.
So he and this guy, Sammy J, had a TV show in Australia for a year. They've also been on, they were a bunch of, like, basically, like, the Jimmy Fallon type of thing where they would do songs, parody songs and stuff. I actually saw Sammy J and Randy in Galway for the Galway Theater or Arts Festival 1 year. Ah. They're fantastic and weird as shit live. They're so funny. Randy's hilarious.
Randy Feltface.
Love it.
I can go next. I saw and loved the movie Monkey Man, starring, written, and directed by Dev Patel. And it's set in India.
Hot Dev Patel.
He's stunningly smoking fucking hot. It is a John Wick-esque action movie. Like, the stunts are phenomenal, and it's got a point of view, definitely because it's very anti-BJP, which is the party in power in India right now, even though they don't actually say it by name. And it's also very queer because it features the Hijra, which are in India are like it's the trans community there. So it's really good. Go see it.
Great. I can go. Ayuden Chronicle just released, I think, on pretty much all platforms. It's a spiritual successor to a game that I think I've talked about a few times on here. It's the Suikoden series. You like recruit over like 100 characters. It's a turn-based RPG, old school sprite graphics. As I've been playing it, it reminds me of the Star Wars, like what is it called, The Force Awakens. You know, that was like basically a copy and paste of the blueprint of Episode 4. That's what this feels like. It's like, I literally just keep leaning over to Andrew, and I'm like, oh, this is the one that's going to die. And like, oh, but then this will be the star that does this. Like, they're doing a really nice parallel while still making it feel very fresh. So if you have any interest in turn-based Japanese RPGs, pick this game up immediately because I think they're going to make a sequel. It's very good.
Loves it. Mine for the week is a comic that I picked up. It's a horror fantasy comic called Die. And it's a role-playing group that gets sucked into their game. It's a Jumanji. The twist is they get sucked in, they come out, and then they get sucked in like a good 30 years later.
It sucked me in, it sucked me off.
I loved it. Pick it up. It's written by Karen Gillan and it's illustrated by Stephanie Hans.
So I meant to listen last week to see what you guys said, but mine is Baby Reindeer. Did anyone talk about that last week?
No.
Okay, good. We fantastic show so on good. Netflix. Intense as shit. It's about this guy who it's a real story, true story. He purposely edits stuff so people don't know who the real people are. It's basically about this guy who's being stalked by this woman who's like in love with him. She calls him Baby Reindeer, and he's kind of a dick, and he kind of admits that he was kind of like not furthering it purposefully, but like inadvertently got her hooked on him to the point where
she's like an aspiring comedian.
Yeah, and it's there's a trans character who's just like fantastic, and she has her own world, so it's not just like here's a trans character, mm-hmm. she's just an accessory. And it's all about, it's just so, it gets worse and worse and worse, just in terms of, it starts out as a comedy kind of in a way.
Yeah.
And it's intense as fuck. It's fantastic. There are a lot of triggers, and I'm not going to spoil them by saying what they are, but just look at the blurb on the top of the screen that says these are the triggers, because you want to know that those are there before you watch it.
They've compared it to I May Destroy You.
It is. It's the companion piece of.
Yeah.
And the fact that both of them are a semi-true story. Or not a semi-true story. It's like probably 80% true story. It's fantastic. It's getting lots of, like, in the last second, it showed up in Emmys, you're able to get through April 30th are the options, and it's like immediately in the people's top of the year.
I need to watch it.
Yep.
It's so good.
It's really good. Episode four
just punches you in the throat like 75 times. It's so good.
I think we watched like 4 or 5 episodes like starting at 11 p.m. because we got so fucking into it.
So I watched it with my parents.
Oh, Jesus.
And they had to stop at episode 4. I continued watching, but my mom was like, how can you handle watching that? Because of similar experiences, like I guess I've worked through it enough to not be super panicked about it.
Wow.
But it's so well done.
Well, it's impressive that you can watch all that, and if you made it this far in the podcast, impressive that you can listen to all this
for 7 years.
For 7 years, y'all.
Thanks for listening to us for seven years.
Tell your friends so they can listen to the next 7. check out our interview, our Creator Crush interview with Isaac Robinson Smith. He's the voice of Bishop. That's coming out May the 1st. And also, we're going to be interviewing Tom Brevoort. So if you have questions for the upcoming senior editor of the X-Books, if there are pointed things you'd like to ask that we will soften in the most cowardly of ways, just enter our DMs on Twitter at HomoSuperiorX or Instagram at HomoSuperiorPodcast. That's been our episode. Happy 7 years, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.
Happy 7.